Thank you very much for the kind introduction and the invitation. The idea here is that we're talking about image processing problem. We are given two images, so-called reference and a template image. So this one could be a reference and this one could be the template. And the objective is to find a reasonable transformation Y such that the transformed image T of Y is similar to the reference image. And just to give you an idea of what this talk is about, what we actually would like to do is somehow we would like to rotate, let's say, scale whatsoever the template image so that it becomes close to the reference image. So this is something we would like to do. In my talk, I want to give a small overview on applications. So I don't want to consider every application in detail. I just want to show you what a wide range, what a variety of application we have. I then switch to a formulation of the problem, and I will use the variational formulation of the problem. I will introduce you to some of the ingredients here, and then I will talk about numerical methods, and if time permits, also about constrained image registration, and conclude. Okay. So let's talk about some of the application. And I always have to start with this one, which this first one I get in touch with the registration problem, and I like it a lot. What you see here is the human brain embedded into paraffin wax. So the yellow stuff here is the human brain. And this brain is sectioned into very thin slices. One of these can be seen here. And these slices, well, they undergo a procedure I'm not going to explain here. What you finally end up is an objective slide where you can make a scan of the slide and you end up with large-scale digital images. So this is what you have. So why are we doing this? So Oliver, he's the anatomist, he's interested in the position and location of neurons. So what he does is he does the sectioning, he derives the two-dimensional sections, and then he does some inspection using a particular light microscope. And with some additional image analysis, you can deduce the information you are interested in. For example, you can find the position of cells here, and so on and so forth. Now, the problem here is that in order to get to this final image, you have to use this light microscope. And in order to use the light microscope, you have to have these two, essentially 2D sections. And the problem is that the information here is related to the information within this 2D section. But as you can already see from the distortion here of the tissue, you will not be able to recover the three-dimensional information. And that's why we have to talk about this. Okay, so here's an example. So here you see two consecutive sections. Well, the stack is about 5,000 sections. So that's about, I guess, 1 terabyte of data or something like this. So this is something you want to compare. Two consecutive sections, and you don't see much of a difference, and this is because Oliver already tried his best. So this is the best you can do with a human eye. And then we tried something which is an affine linear model. I'm not going to explain this in detail here, but you see we already get a little better than he does. And this is basically in order to show you that the deformation process here in this procedure is a nonlinear stuff. So this is the best you can do with a linear model. And here we do something on top of this, which is actually a nonlinear model, in this case an elastic model. And you see that we get pretty impressive results. You also see that the difference is not zero, and this is something you would like to have because the two sections show different anatomical materials, so there's no reason why they should be identical. Okay, and just, well, here's the reconstruction of the part of the visual cortex in our brain. And just to make sure that there's much more behind this problem than seen in the first glance, what we also do is, before even doing the sectioning, we do a kind of a photo of this. This is the brain now, the rat brain, sorry. This is the rat brain. We do a photo, and we have the section, and we may want to align this. So in this case, the modalities of the images can be quite different. And in this small animation here, you can see that still we can do some kind of a match between the two images. Okay, so this is this, and here's another example. Again, it's the rat brain, and if you stack all the different sections, one of this, and you look from the side, you may want, will see something like this one here, and if you do the registration process on these sections, you will end up with something like this. So you somehow fit these together, and this would be if you look before registration, so you can hardly see any structure in this area here. While after registration, you are still fine in this virtual slide to see some of the finite structures. So that's what we would like to see. Now, a completely different problem is related to neuroimaging. So in the previous problem I told you, we have a physical process which is introduced to the tissue. So while the knife, the cutting knife, is going into the wax, some physical forces acting and so on and so forth. Well, in this problem, it's completely different. What you see here is, so if I ask you to follow the tip of my finger, something is going on in your brain, hopefully. And Brian Wendell is actually able to measure what's going on. So what you see here is the data from a measurement of the visual cortex, the flattened visual cortex of a human brain. And what he would like to find is he would like to identify particular areas in this data. And what is of enormous value here is that he has an idea of the ideal situation here. And this is the ideal situation, this kind of fan. So what he can do is he can do a segmentation. So he can find the appropriate segments in the ideal situation. And this is what I showed here in the black line. And what we then do is we do a registration of the ideal situation to the measurement. And while doing this, we carry over the segmentation from the ideal to the concrete data. So we get a segmentation of the data, which would be very hard to obtain if we wouldn't have this pre-knowledge. Now, I mentioned that this is a complete different approach than the previous one, because here there's no reason why this transformation has any physical means. We have an ideal and we have a concrete measurement, and there may not even exist a mapping between these two. It's a completely different scenario. Okay. I just want to very briefly mention that there's also application related to diffusion tensor imaging. A lot of stuff is going on here, but I don't want to go into details. Another very important application is tumor monitoring or tumor treatment. So what you see here is a very complicated image. It's 4D image. It's a time series of 3D magnetic resonance images of a female breast. And I only show two time points. Pre-contrast, post-contrast, and 2D slices out of the volume. Now, what happens is a contrast agent is introduced in the body, and this will locate at some structures which are very energy demanding, like, for example, a tumor, and these structures will brighten up. And the idea is that you can identify the structures by subtraction of the two images, and this is basically shown in this small movie. So here you see the tissue that demands for energy. Well, of course, you see the vessels because the contrast agent directly goes into the vessel, and you can also see that there's some structure here which is most likely to be a tumor. Now, the problem here is that this information heavily relies on the information that you monitor one particular point in the tissue, but because the patient has motion, like breathing, heartbeat, and so on and so forth, you normally get blurred images, misaligned images, and that's why we need registration in this application. This application is very interesting as well because the gray value pattern of the image changes due to contrast uptake. So the images brighten up over time. So it makes this a very challenging problem as well. Here's something related to liver registration, which I'm not talking about in this detail. I want to focus on this application here, again, a registration process. So the situation here is that some poor patient has to undergo a liver surgery. And what happens is you see our colleagues here opening the body, and then you are facing something like this, and now you have to put your knife and make a cut somewhere. And of course, these guys would like to know where to make the cut. Because if you had a vessel underneath the surface, then you're in big trouble. So what's helping here is that before this patient underwent this intervention, you do a CT scan here of the data, and you do some pre-processing of the CT scan. You identify branches of the vessels. You identified the tumor, and you also identified vessels supporting this tumor. And then you may do a plan based on this data, and you know what to do if you see all this nice 3D information. But now the patients show up, and what you would like to do is you would like to overlay this information of the current situation. And that's, right now it's not possible, but the idea of this project here is that While you are here, you are using a fast imaging device like ultrasound, and you get information as indicated here, and you may use this information to overlay the data you acquired before. Okay, so that's the idea, and here's some first results, very recent results, so that's last week, and here you see the visualization of the CT, and here you see the visualization of the ultrasound, and you see it's quite different modalities again. And what you see, it's 3D data, so you see something here. And what's helping for this particular application is that we know some particular points which are set during surgery by the surgeon. This is used to initialize our process, and after this, we may do a further alignment. So this is more or less the state where we are right now in the registration of ultrasound and CT. Okay. There's relation to cardiac images, where you basically want to find out what's wrong in your heart muscle. And again, since the heart is moving, you need kind of registration to compensate for this. I'm not going into the details here. You can use registration to map in Atlas the high-resolution data to cross-resolution data. I'm not going into this. You can use this if you want to do eye surgery, where movement, again, is a big problem. And here's one of our famous test cases, supported by a company in Germany, Hamburg. And this was very funny. I was debating with some of your colleagues, and there was a third person in the room, and he mixed up Philips and Siemens. So rather than addressing you by Philips, he addressed this guy by Siemens. And the other, so the Philips representative, looked at him and said, "You mean the small startup company in south of Germany?" It was really funny. Okay. So here, I mean, that's an extreme example here with an inhale and an exhale phase. And what you would like to do is you would like to compromise these images. I don't know, hopefully not, but if you ever have to go to such a treatment, you are asked to obey to some breathing commands like inhale, exhale, stop breathing, and this is somehow a hardware solution to compensate for motion artifacts. And here you can see, however, how you could do this by software if you like. So there are some issues. For example, if you look, first of all, it's very impressive. So as we showed this to the radiologist, he was quite upset that we took all the CT sections over all this time because it's a high doses then. But then we explained, no, this is software, and he was a little bit more relaxed. So it's quite an impressive result. But if you see here, some of the ribs are not really transformed in an appropriate way, and we are coming to this later. Okay, so this is another example from this company here. I think it's also a test case, because what's going on here is you have a knee in a straight position and a knee in a bended position, and you have all stuff floating around like the bones, fat, and muscles, and so on. And just to give you an idea, this would be a maximum intensity projection before registration. So what you do is you look at the subtraction image, the 3D volume, you look from above, and you just count the maximum intensity in this direction. This gives you this image. You are looking from this side and from the other side. So this is somehow what you see here, and this is before, and this is after. And what you should realize is that there's really a big change between these two. Okay, now a last example here, and again, this is one of my favorite examples. This is a small company, even closer to Lübeck than Hamburg. And what you see here is a horse. This is Leicester, and Leicester is a racing horse. It doesn't want to race anymore, and you do some inspection on this horse, so you inject the radioactive tracer, and you are looking what's going on with this tracer. So again, the idea is that the tracer moves to parts which are very energy demanding, say. And this would be what you get by this measurement. So this is real data from Leicester. Okay, so this is the image. And I show you this in order to make clear that images are not just like your holiday photos or photos of your children. It could be quite some interesting stuff inside here. So this is what you see. I'm not telling you that your children are not interesting. And what people do that's more or less state of the art is they just do an average image here. So they just average the image, and this is the information you get. And now you can look at this and you see the vertebrae of Lester and you have to decide something. And what we did is, before doing the average, we did registration on this data. And if you do this, you will end up with this. And you get a much clearer, much sharper picture of the same data as before. So here you can see that something is really, there's some hot spots. So the reason why you don't see it here is because the horse is moving, you have blur in the data. So this is hidden somehow by the blur. Okay. So by now, you should be convinced that registration shows up in medical imaging whenever you compare, merge, or integrate images from different times, devices, perspectives, or objectives. So that's quite a big area in medical imaging. You can have it if you want to find a particular structure in your data, like a catheter in a blood vessel. You will have it for atlas mapping, which I'm not going to into detail here, and also for serial sectioning, and there are many, many other applications in the medical environment. And of course, it's not only restricted to medical application, but if you look at Google Earth or whatever, you also have registration problems where you have different images and you want to stitch them together to a big field. So a lot of applications floating around. Okay, I may want to skip this. Now let's return to the problem and let's look a little bit more in detail to this problem. Just to remind you, the objective is we have two images, reference template. We want to find the reasonable transformation Y such that the transformed image is similar to R. And there are immediately a few questions, namely, what precisely is the transformed image? And I will explain a little bit about the image model here. How do we measure similarity of images? It's also an issue. And what do we mean by reasonability of our transformation? And in the setting for today, I'm using an optimization approach where actually it's a variational approach, so everything here functions, where I try to optimize a joint functional based on a distance, a regularizer, and the minimization with respect to the transformation Y. Okay, so let's start with transforming images, and I want to explain you a little bit more this building block in this formula here. Okay, so I'm going to use a continuous model for the reference and the template image, but since most often in application data is given in a discrete fashion, the first step we have to do is we have to create a function. Here's a small example. Let's say I have a 1D situation where I have some points given and I know some function values at these points. Then the easiest way of getting to a function is kind of a nearest neighbor interpolation where assigned the same value for all points close by. And this is what you see probably if you look very careful to the resolution on my monitor or on the projection here. This is more or less what you would see. Now this will not work for us because we want to do some optimization, and if we start with a non-continuous function, we are already done with this, so this will not work. So somehow we will try to find the blue curve, which is much nicer and much smoother, and this is a 1D situation, and you can imagine that the same goes through to any dimension you would like. So here's a 2D example. You see the data as a function, and of course you can do the very same for 3D data. Now there's a little more to this, and this is related to multi-scale issue. So let's say this is the function we have, and I'm not presenting this function with one scale, but I may want to replace this by various functions like this here, where I somehow degrade the function up to the final one, which would be this completely zero. So this enables me to get rid of some of the details in my images. And that's the scale space idea, and of course we can use this for the 2D data here as well. So I degrade my image and I'm left with the main features within the image. So that's an issue we may want to use and for some of the problems we have to use. Another thing which is very popular in imaging is a multi-level strategy, where in contrast to the previous one, this is a discrete process, so it's not continuous, it's discrete and it's based on the data you are given. So you somehow modify the data you are given in order to construct the new function. So this would be the initial situation, say, and now we are only using part of the data. Well, that's some hand waving here. And by doing this, we get smoother and smoother versions of our function as well. And again, the key idea here is to get rid of the details in the image. Okay. Now we have some basic understanding on the images, on interpolation. We are ready to go for the transformation. And the difference here is that instead of throwing in the point x here, we just throw in the y of x. So here's a small example where I just do a rotation. And the blue grid here indicates somehow the function, well, the vector field y of x. So this is kind of a discretized version of y of x to make this a little bit more interesting. So this is how I can rotate my image. And you already see that this is somehow counterintuitive. So if I translate y to the left, the hand actually appears to the right. Okay, so that's one thing which is always a little bit a surprise. It becomes a little bit more clearer if you look at the scale. So if I zoom in, if I put more points in the center of my image, the image will appear much larger. So it's again kind of counterintuitive. Okay, so this is now how we can play with our images. We can change the appearance of the template image. We can transform it. And not only by something which is very, let's see, oops, very structured, but also we can have some nice things like nonlinear deformation as well. Okay. So next thing we would like to understand is the distance measure. So how do we actually measure distances between images? Well, probably one of the most intuitive approach is something which is based on features. So you identify features in your images, and there's a whole bunch of features. I'm not going to talk about all the details. Very popular was markers. Markers are some things that are attached to the patient before imaging. So you just put some screws somewhere, and later on in your images you can identify the location of the screws. So that's some issue, but I'm not going into this. Another thing is you first do the imaging and then you deduce landmark information, so anatomical landmarks out of the images. And here's an example. You see the hands here. You have some outstanding points. However you will find them, you have the corresponding points in your template, and the idea now is to find a transformation mapping from one side to the other side. And here would be a small example on how this would look like. Okay, so this is doable, and this is still done, but you immediately see the drawbacks of this approach. So this is only working for the landmarks. For example, here you have a quite unnatural bending of the finger. But what do you expect? You didn't supply information in this area, so that's the best you can do. Okay, so another class of distance measures is what people would call volumetrics. You're using really all the data acquired, not only for determining the landmarks, but really for comparison. And a straightforward approach here is to just see the difference, the point-wise difference between the transformed template and the reference, and then you square it up and sum it up somehow. So that's the, let's say, straightforward thing a mathematician would do, and here's the result. So here you see our reference hand, the transformed template. Here you see just the difference between these two images, and I show you the energy in this difference image as a function over a rotation angle. Okay. So this is how this would look like. So you see how this difference looks like. And now you can argue that probably it's a good choice for the rotation angle to pick it where this distance is somehow minimal. So we end up with a minimization problem. Okay. You can extend this idea from a direct comparison between this intensity and this intensity, since in almost all applications, the intensities are not one-to-one. So like ultrasound, CT example, you have quite different intensities in the two images. So you may want to do a little more. Here's something you can do, the correlation-based measure. I'm not going into details here. Very popular since mid of the 90s is mutual information, which is basically based on the entropy of the joint density of the two images. And again, a small animation. So here you see the joint density of the two images, meaning if you pick a particular point here, you basically get the information on how likely it would be to identify a pixel with, let's say, a gray value, this one for the one image and this one for the other image. So this is kind of a probability. And what you do is you're measuring the sharpness, the entropy of this joint density. And in this situation, this was more or less look like this one. And you see again, there's a particular point where this is very sharp. And you also see that I interchange the colors here, meaning that you have many points where you have background color in this image and foreground color in the other image. So these are some of the distance measures. Another one, somehow in between, is the normalized gradient field, which we came up with. And I think it's a very interesting option here. And of course, you're free to pick whatever you like and whatever is application conform. Okay, so now we know how to deal with this part. And I also want to talk a little bit about the regularization part here. So why is this? You probably know all this small puzzle where you have a given configuration and a wanted configuration, and you are asked by using this unoccupied place here to transfer from here to here. You probably also know a very quick solution to this problem, which is using a small force, open the puzzle, picking the two pieces, interchange them, and closing the puzzle. Okay, this works. Great. Why I'm telling this to you? Well, let's look back to our hand. Now, let's say I'm picking two parts here, these two fingers. I put them, and I just interchange them. I may get a perfect fit, but I also get a solution which makes neither the patient nor the physician really happy to just interchange two fingers. So there's something in this problem. You are not allowed to use this particular solution. And what we learn here is that the registration is effectively the severely ill posed problems. So there are solutions you don't want. And we need to put some restriction onto the transformation Y. That's really needed here. And the goal here is to put some physical restriction. Okay. So there's a small overview here. There are basically two types of schools. One is to use implicit regularization, and the other one would be to use explicit regularization. Now, let's say in the parametric registration, what you do is you restrict yourself to low-dimensional space. Like, for example, you only allow for rigid transformation, fine, linear, spline, whatsoever. And the problem becomes regularized by properties of the space. So this is kind of somehow implicit. So you don't have really a physical model for what's going on. So the problem is stated here. So you want to minimize your distance, but you are only allowed for such a set of transformations. That's one class of methods. The other class is to use non-parametric registration. That is, you would add a regularization or penalty term, if you like. And this penalty term pays attention that some of the solutions are outruled, so are not really attractive anymore. This allows for a physical model, but the price you have to pay is that this Y, the function Y you're looking for, is no longer parameterizable. So we have to deal with this. Okay, so here are some of the popular choices for such a regularizer. I'm not going into all of these details here, but one would be to use the elastic potential. So the idea is that you can think about one image as painted onto a rubber sheet, say, and now you can tear this rubber sheet, and while tearing this rubber sheet, you may eventually make this image look like the other one. but you also introduce internal forces to the rubber, and this, for example, prohibits that you really squeeze it by far out. So that's more or less the idea here. This is what people do. You can go one step further, so you can make the transformation time dependent, and you can, with some hand waving, using the elastic potential of the time derivative. This is more or less like painting the image, let's say, of the surface of a honey, and now you can let the honey float and observe what's happening. So this is what people do. Here's a particular regularizer which is very well suited for numerical purposes. So this is a fast one, and I don't want to go into details. Here's another one which we came up with, and maybe I should explain a little bit more in detail what's going on here. And of course, if you know something better, feel free to add this list. So why are we looking at this curvature registration here? So this idea shows up while doing this histological serial sectioning, and somehow what we thought is that doing a linear transformation, so translating, rotating, whatever you want, should be somehow for free, because it's completely arbitrary on how the section will end up on your objective slide. So what we decided is we would like to have a regularizer where affine linear transformations are in the kernel. But unfortunately, all the previous regularizers do not have this property. So we decided to use this one. And I think the main point here is that you use second-order derivatives inside. So if you have something linear and you compute the second-order derivative, it's gone. So it will not be penalized by your regularizer. And just to show you that this really can make a difference, I want to show you the registration of this reference and this template by using one of the previous approaches, which happens to be the fluid one in this case, with some hand waving. So this would more or less the way you're getting from the template to the reference. And you see, I mean, it doesn't look so pleasing, right? And if you do this with the curvature, you get something which looks like this. Now I want to make a vote here. So who likes the fluid approach better? One. Who likes the curvature approach better? Okay, more than one. Which one is right? Both? Ah, none. So actually I created this image from this one by just rotating this one. So the key point here is, this is an ill-posed problem, so we don't know. We don't know which of the several solutions here would be the right one. That's a crucial point. So we don't know, and since we don't know, it really depends on the regularization. Okay, so let me summarize this. Registration is an ill-posed problem, so it requires regularization, and the regularizer controls the reasonability of our transformation. So if we decide that we want to have something like this linear stuff in the curvature, we should go for the curvature. If we decide that the fluid one is more what we would like to see, then we should go for that one. The problem then is really to find application-conform regularization, where most often we would like to use something which is related to a physical model, and the other thing is we will end up with some high-dimensional optimization problems here. Okay, so now we understand the problem, I hope so, and I want to talk a little bit about the numerical method for image registration here. And you see that this book already mentioned, and if you want to support research in this very important field, please buy. Okay. So there are basically two numerical approaches. One is the optimized discretized, and the other is the discretized optimized approach. And this book mainly covers the first one. So why do we talk about this? Well, the problems here are relatively large. So in 2D, you end up roughly about 2 million of unknowns for meaningful discretization. In 3D, you have like 500 million unknowns. So you want to solve this. Let's say while the intervention is going on in the surgeon room, well, you have to be, you know, you have to find something, so you maybe want to do something about this. Okay, so let's start with the optimized discretized approach, and this basically facilitates the Euler-Lagrange equation. So you have this variation of problems with joint functional, you want to minimize, you compute necessary conditions, which are basically that the derivative has to vanish at the minimizer, you derive a system of nonlinear partial differential equations here, and just to give you an example, for the sum of squared difference, this integral measure, you would have a F which is of this type here. So you see you have nonlinearity coming from the image here, and you have the gradient of the image showing up here. And if you pick the elastic regularizer, for example, you end up with the Navier-Lamy operator here. So this is basically what you will see. And now you have your system, and you want to solve it. Maybe before I want to solve it, I should say something. So this F here is related to the distance measure. And you can think about the F as a driving force in your registration process, while this A here is related to the regularizer, and this keeps the transformation somehow meaningful. So like in the elastic case with the rubber sheet, this is mainly the internal forces here you see. And the Euler-Lagrange equation here leads to this PDE. It's basically telling you that at the solution you're heading for, you have the balance of forces. Okay, so how do we go for this? So you want to solve this. The first thing is that you have this nonlinearity. So what people do is they somehow introduce a discrete time. So you introduce the iteration number. And then you assume that yk is given, and you solve for yk plus 1. Or a little bit more explicit, you introduce an additional time component, and you derive this time-dependent partial differential equation to steady state. Yt is 0, then you end up with a solution. The nice thing about all these approaches is that everything that's difficult is dumped into the right-hand side. Great. If you do this, spatial discretization of your problem is straightforward. We have very efficient solvers for the linear systems. We can make small composable steps. Actually, some of the movies I showed you are precisely prepared in this way, so this gives you control on the process. And you have very low moderate assumption on, let's say, the force field and the regularizer in terms of smoothness. That's nice. Unfortunately, what happened here is we lost our optimization problem. So we are just solving for a root of this equation here. So we are losing a lot of the tools optimization can give up. That's not so nice. Another thing is that's a highly nonlinear problem. And the nonlinearity here enters only via the right-hand side. So in order to make this problem a little bit more reasonable, you may want to add more of the nonlinearity already from the very beginning. And this is somehow related to the small steps. Well, small steps are great if you want to have this movie. It's not really nice if you have to go a big step and you have to do it in very small steps, right? So this slows down the process tremendously. Okay, another nice thing is we have software on this on the web, and you can download it from there. Okay, so that's the optimized discretized part. Now let's go for the other one, the discretized optimized. And again, so the thing here is you just invert the order of the operation. So we start with the discretization on a fixed level h here, and finally at the end of the day you let h go to 0, but that's a different story. And then you tried this discrete optimization problem, and you try to solve this discrete optimization problem. Okay. In order to solve this, we can use efficient optimization schemes, like, for example, in Newton's type scheme of this. If you want to do this, you end up with linear systems of type Hessian, update, right-hand side, where the most interesting part here is the Hessian, and the Hessian is composed from something which is called M here, and M is related to the data. So here, the data also enters the operator, and that's a big difference to the previous one, where the previous one would be something like this in the linear system. So here, you have already something coming from the data. The not so nice thing about this is that this operator is already much more complicated than the previous one, so we are limited in the solver we can use, and here we implemented efficient multigrid solvers. With this approach, we can do large steps. That's good. Not so nice about this is, so we are limited to multigrid, so we have to ensure that multigrid will work, which actually means that the discretization of the problem is no longer straightforward. And if we really want to benefit from the Newton type scheme, well, all parts in this scheme have to be at least differentiable. Better twice. So that's also an issue. Okay. Very important, and this is related to the multi-scale, multi-level stuff here, is that let's say we want to find a minimizer of such a function here. What we actually do is we replace this function by something that's coarse, that's nicer for us, let's say it's smoother, and we may even replace this version by something that's more smoother, like the green one here. Then we start computing a minimizer of the green function, which is maybe located here, and then we use this point as a starting value for the blue function. Okay, so starting here we get to this one, and if we do this, we start for the red function at this position, and we will end up here. So this is a very important concept here, and it allows us to hopefully bypass some of the local minima, and it also speeds up the journey tremendously. Okay, this of course not only works for a 1D problem, here's the situation for our images. So the idea here is basically transfer your data to a particular level where it's coarse, approximately solve our problem so that we have the Y, then we prolongate this Y to the final level and we use this as a perfect starting point. And we repeat this scheme until we are satisfied with our result. Okay, so the advantage of this multi-level strategy is it adds in additional regularization, it puts a focus on the essential minima, it creates extraordinary good starting values, and it reduces our computation time. And I'm not aware of any disadvantages of this stuff. Okay, I probably will skip this, and I want to talk a little bit about constrained image registration. And this is related to the fact that we really don't know what's going on. For example, for the square, I showed you at least three different solutions to the problem, the fluid one, the curvature one, and the rotation one. And what we would like to do is we would like to add additional information. So for example, if I just say that the vertices of the square goes onto the vertices of this stuff, then I immediately would rule out the rotation, for example. So I want to add some additional information. And I'm not going through this list here. A lot of work is going on in precisely this direction, but I don't have the time to go through this. So just to make this idea clear, because I already showed some of the landmark stuff, so this is what we saw in before, and what I would like to do is now, I would like to continue my process, but constrained to this location of the landmarks. So we use first the landmarks, and then we allow for some further stuff, but the landmarks have to stay fixed in this process. So this would some kind of constraint we would like to see here. And actually, this is what I showed you for the CT ultrasound image of the surgery. Okay. So how is this? So we want to add information. So our image registration problem, meanwhile, should be quite familiar, get some new constraints. And here are two examples. One is the landmark example. So we want to obey that the transformed point of one image is related to the corresponding point in the other image. Another constraint could be that we focus on change of volume of our mapping. So we may don't want to allow for volume change, which is important while measuring, for example, tumor growth or something like this. I don't want to, my numerical scheme actually to touch the data. Okay. So what you can do is, and this is what many people do, is you can add a soft constraint or a penalty. So this is basically what's written here. So typically you have another function psi here, which is a simple function, so just the square of the 2 norm or the logarithm of the guy, and then you sum up all this stuff. Another type of problem would be to use hard constraint, where you don't have the penalty, but you really live on kind of a manifold here. And of course, you can have both types of constraints here. Okay. Now I want to show this in a small example, and this is rigidity constraints. So for some images, like for example the knee, I may have some additional knowledge, like that what I painted white here may should be transformed rigidly. So I don't want to bend this, because this is a bone, and I don't want to bend the bone due to my numerical scheme. So what I would like to see is something which may be close to this one. So I want to obey the rigidity of these structures. And just to point this out, that's not a global rigid transformation I'm looking. I only want to keep this part rigid and this part rigid. Okay, so not globally rigid. Okay, so, well, that's straightforward to do in this approach. So we set up some penalty here, so I go for the penalty approach. And this penalty basically measures the linearity, orthogonality, and orientation preservation of my transformation. So linearity, for example, I just compute all the second order derivatives and I stack them together. For the orthogonality, I have something like this, which is already not linear anymore. And this determinant here is, well, space dependent. In 3D, you have a polynomial of degree 3 here in your variables, which is already a nasty constraint. But we know that the function is rigid if all of these constraints are 0. So we can use this. We can throw this in here. And, well, there's a very small item here, which I may should point out. So that's quite complicated norm here. It's a Q-norm. So what is a Q-norm? So we don't want this constraint to be fulfilled everywhere. We only want to be valid on these wide areas. So I'm using kind of a characteristic function for this area, and I put the stuff rigid on these areas only. Okay. Now there's only one small tiny detail, because due to our transformation, the areas where I want to preserve rigidity is transported. So I have to somehow monitor, keep trace on this, and this is why in this funny norm, this y shows up. So this really depends on y as well, which makes the formulas a little bit more lengthy, I guess. Okay. So very brief numerical scheme. This is pretty standard. So we discretize somehow. We get a discrete version of our constraints, which can then be written as R transpose R, basically. We have explicit formula for the derivatives. We can set this up. We have a Gauss-Newton type scheme where only the part related to the data is approximated. And we solve it. Okay, so here are some results. Reference template with our initial mask, the initial difference. This is what you would get for the non-penalized version, and this is what the result would look like for the penalized version. Of course, you are not as good as there in terms of the difference, because you're only on a manifold, on a smaller space where you create your solution. But what you see for the non-penalized, you get some severe bending of the bone here, while it's more reasonable in the penalized one. Okay? So we can look at the deformed grid. Well, I don't think that you can see it, but here from the just mapping the change of volume here, you see that without the constraints, you somehow change volume quite a bit, while here you have these areas where it's more or less constant. Okay. So let me summarize this. The results I showed you are okay. The implementation is straightforward. However, the constraints are not really fulfilled, so it's not really rigid on these areas. And for this approach, for penalty approach, we somehow have to pick some additional ingredients, and this is something we may want to avoid. So we went one step further, and we really want to stay to the hard rigidity constraint. Instead of adding a penalty here, we really want to be there. What we did here is we changed our framework. So rather than looking at this at the Eulerian framework, where basically you fixate a window and you are observing what's going under this window, we divided into very small pieces, and we keep track of any of these small pieces during the process. So I really want to follow every of these tiny little things here, and you see these tiny little things actually change the volume as well. So there are some of them which are bigger and some of them are smaller. Okay, so that's might be a problem, because now the computation of your distance and your regularizer are a little bit more involved. So you want to give more weight to cells that are otherwise just disappear. So this means that the computation of the objective function now involves the determinant of the Jacobian. However, and that's really the nice part, the rigidities, the constraints, are controlled in the original domain, which means that in the original domain, I can phrase this in a parametric form. And this is more or less, some hand-waving, a linear constraint here, and this acts onto the number of constraints. Okay, again, there's some scheme here. I don't want to go into detail. We are using sequential quadratic programming for this. Here are some results. So again, reference and template. Here you see, in this case, how the template is being transformed. This would be the difference before registration, after registration. And here you see how, again, the determinant of the Jacobian changes, and you see it's very good on these areas where we wanted. Okay, so let me summarize the hard rigidity constraints here. Again, the results are pretty much okay. The implementation is interesting. Now we know that the constraints are fulfilled, and this is guaranteed by the approach, and it's also measured here. And I think from the application point of view, the most important thing here is that we do not introduce additional parameters. There are already enough parameters to be handled in medical imaging, and we don't want to introduce new ones. So that's, from my point of view, that's really one of the key issues here. Okay, so let me summarize what I tried to tell you. So I tried to give you an introduction to image registration. Hopefully I could make clear that this is a very important problem. It's very challenging, and I think it's also very interdisciplinary, so people from various areas can contribute. I presented a very general framework here based on a variational approach, a couple of building blocks, transform image. Discussion of various building blocks here, so the transformed image, distance measures, and regularizers. I briefly give some hints about the numerical methods used here. Particular issues here are multi-level strategies and the reflection of optimized discretized versus discretized optimized. And I mentioned some of the constraints here. We could talk about landmarks, local rigidity. There are many, many others. I haven't time for this, and I want to actually conclude with one final slide. And this is the name of my former group, Solutions and Algorithms for Image Registration. We did a pretty good job, I think, in doing some registration here as well. Thank you very much.